It's a growing number of homeless people, and it's just going to get a lot worse. People without houses who deserve a place to live. Stay safe, Keith. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
KBOO Portland.
Support for the Dirtbag and KBOO Community Radio comes from our members and from One Green World, a family-owned and operated nursery off Southeast Foster on 134th Avenue in Portland, providing a selection of fruiting trees, vines, shrubs, and vegetables and supplies. More information is available at onegreenworld.com.
This is KBOO Portland.
Now I'm a farmer, and I'm digging, 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 digging. Now I'm a farmer, and I'm digging, 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 digging.
It's a... Good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 noon. Welcome to The Dirt Bag, a program dedicated to all things related to edible gardening. Sharing a screen with me today is my guest, Jim Gilbert.
Morning, Glenn.
We had tried to do an in-person recording, but the most important member of our team, Joe, our sound engineer, that's Joe Wilson of Bergman Productions, was a bit under the weather yesterday, so we are using, once again, though, his great talents and ability to record us individually through our phones, or excuse me, through our laptops. And so we were recording this program a few days before the airtime.
Right. And we're all sitting at our homes, and there may be a grandkids run in, or there might be a dog barking or car go by or something. So this is real life.
That's right. We're recording it live, but it's being recorded. How's that? Yes. Also, an important part of this show is that we are now in the last week of our membership drive, and we encourage you to become a member or to renew your membership or to up your membership. And there are four ways that you can do that. There used to be five, but not this time. You can go to the website kboo.fm/give. On the mobile app, the KBOO mobile app, you can click on the donate button. You can text KBOO to 44-321, or you can mail it to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. The option that is off the table, in-person giving, I believe. Probably right. Can't just show up at the station.
And you can't call in like we used to be able to do, too.
Well, that's true, too. Okay, so yeah. We still have four good options for doing that.
Yeah, and we know we can't tell you how important it is, because KBOO is a really wonderful independent radio station, doesn't get support from anybody but its listeners and some sponsors, and you guys want to keep Glenn and I on the air. So we'd love to stay on the air with you.
And lots of information on how to grow your own, which will save you money, and you can pass some of that savings along to KBOO.
That's right.
We have another jam-packed show today, including the very interesting responses, or some interesting responses that we got from last month's puzzler. Jim will address that and give out the correct answer or answers, as there may be. We also have a new plant of the month. I don't know that we've done jujubes. I know you've brought some in for tasting in the past, Jim. Of course, that's one drawback of doing our online recording here. We can't sample.
Like I like to say, Glenn, you can't digitize food. So I
that's
can't
right.
send you a jujube.
Right.
Over the internet.
Farmers will never be replaced. Right. We'll also talk about what's been being harvested. I mean, this is, you know, we're wrapping up, but it's still just peak harvest time, early October here. What we're harvesting on the farm and in the garden. Also, this is the time, really, when I think you should be planning your spring garden. Now, we're, you know, preparing for winter, but we should be planning for that. And I'm always thinking about what I do in the garden now. How will this affect what I want to do in the spring? And I'll give you some of my experiences on that. Our Dirtbag Dictionary term will be calyx. We'll explain more of that when we get there. And Jim's going to start a new series, just a segment here. I'm not sure how long it'll take, but it's, I mean, how many months. But it's an important thing to know about our state of Oregon and its land use planning and how it came to be and why that's important for particularly farmers, of which Jim is one. So I'll have a short history of that. And also, what's annoying me this month? We're just going to get this off my chest right away. Start there. You know, I go for a jog just about every morning. And, you know, I'll see other joggers out there. And I'll see, you know, somebody across the street or so. And sometimes they'll be running in the same direction that I am, and I'll look at them and say, now they're going pretty slow, and just thinking to myself that. And then I see that they're running faster than I am. So that annoys me that I'm not as fast a runner as I think I am. There's nobody but to blame but myself. I still like it though. Anyway, got that off my chest. What an admission to make there. Well, let's see.
I won't hold it against you, Glenn.
Okay.
Yeah. I had an interesting experience recently. I was up visiting my grandkids up in Bellingham, Washington, and my daughter, who's quite a bit younger than me, was carrying two of them.
Wait a minute. Your daughter is younger, quite a bit younger
my
than you?
My daughter is quite a bit younger than me. It's surprising to say, right?
Okay. Yeah. Joe says, who would have thunk?
And she's carrying two grandkids, and I have a hard time carrying one.
Oh, yeah, that's the same realization, I guess.
Yeah.
You used to probably haul lots of equipment around on the farm, too.
I still do okay, but not like, that just showed me that there's more to do with the weights if I want to do that kind of carrying around large kids,
point.
You know.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, we don't have any events, do we? Oh, there's probably some events. We just don't know of any events.
Yeah.
Hey, believe it or not, I'm actually going to do an in-person garden talk next month.
Wow.
Yeah. They decided to do it in live. They started doing them, I think, last week or last month. This is the Salem Hardy Plant Society.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And so they said there were fewer people there, but they really do, they enjoyed it, and they're going for it. So I said,
great.
Count me in.
Great.
I'll be fully boosted by then, too, so. I'll feel pretty good about that.
Good. Great.
Yeah. So anyway, that's one event that I know that is happening down in Salem.
Yeah. Yeah. Not much else going on, though, with the in-person stuff. Too bad. But
you know, are there any fruit tastings going on? I haven't heard if Portland Nursery is doing their apple tasting.
Haven't heard. Haven't heard of anything.
Yeah. Boy,
so
we...
Hopefully everybody has fruit to taste at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be nice.
Right. Well, I'm assuming jujubes are amongst the fruit that you're tasting, Jim?
You know, it's remarkable this year, just a comment in general about the harvest. It's been really a good year for fruit. I think probably the, even though I hated that hot weather, you know, day after day and hot, and no rain and just dry. But it's a remarkable how good a crops we've had. We had the best crop of peaches we'd ever had. Apples are everywhere, plums. It's really amazing. And jujube, which ripens pretty late normally, are ripening right now.
Okay, Jim, I think I need to correct myself then. So the emphasis is on the first jujube. Not jujube.
Yeah.
Okay.
I always call it jujube, right? I mean.
Okay, jujube. All right.
Yeah. And you remember when we were kids, there was some, I don't know if they still make them. I remember there was some kind of a little candy that was called jujube, but I don't know how you pronounced it then. Maybe I pronounced it differently, but.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, carry on. So it's spelled J-U-J-U-B-E.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
It's pretty unusual in the U.S. I bet some listeners are probably growing it. Another name for it, a more common name, was Chinese date, because when it's ripe, it's dark brown, and some of the fruit has something of a date-like flavor, and a sort of a crisp apple-like texture. Then there's kind of two types of jujube, one that's used for fresh eating, another one typically dried. It's quite popular in Asian countries, Korea, China, Japan. We have some really interesting varieties from different parts of the world. Some of the attributes of the plant, it's a naturally small tree, quite attractive, slow growing. It blooms, and you'd like this, Glenn, I think. It blooms in late June, typically, and bees love it. So it's a lot of flowers. There's just a humming sound in the distance when it's in bloom, because there's just so many bees working it.
You'll have to send me a photo of that. a bee on a bloom, so I can put it in. I have a database of bees and blooms.
Okay,
and just what honeybees are, readily visit, and so I'll try to remind you of that next.
Okay,
June.
It'd be next year, of course, because it's already done that. But that would be fun. The bees love it, and for bees, it's a great tree just for itself because it's blooming much later than most fruit trees are in bloom.
How big will the tree get?
Well, I have some pretty old ones here at the nursery, probably 30 plus years, and they're about maybe 10 feet tall.
Not huge.
Not huge at all.
Not walnut size.
No. They're probably smaller than, I would say, smaller than a peach. Mm-hmm. And they're slower growing than just about any other tree any other fruit tree that we have. So it takes a while to get to that size, but we have trees that are 4 feet tall that have fruit on them, so they start at a pretty young age. And there's a lot of varieties in the world, not so many that have been offered in the U.S. Lee and Lang are two common ones you can find, and they're okay, they're pretty good, but we've brought some ones over from different parts of the world in years past. One we call Coco, which has a fruit that's something like, has a sort of a coconut-like flavor to it. Massandra, which is from the Black Sea and area on the Crimean Peninsula, which is a really good flavor, nice flavored jujube for fresh eating. A new one that we received a few years ago from Korea is what we call Empress G. That's G-E-E. Like gee whiz, but it's a really good one too, and all of these again are really attractive small trees that fit well in a home landscape. So, and I would say there's no disease. We've never seen a disease or pest problem on them. Very easy to grow. The only sometimes a problem if fall rains can cause the fruit to split a little bit, but it doesn't. But by that time, the fruit's ripe anyway, and you can just eat it fresh, even if it's split. It doesn't hurt it, but it doesn't always happen.
What's the texture of the flesh? These are pretty small. I mean, they're, like you said earlier, date size.
Yeah, yeah, like your thumb maybe, or a little, or some are bigger than that. Flesh size varies. The ones that we offer are all for fresh eating, and so they have a like a crisp apple like texture, sweet flavor, and very nice to eat. It's been interesting the last week or so. We've had my two grandkids visiting, and I'll talk a little bit more about that as the show goes on. But they're one's four and one is six, and they are fruit explorers to the max. So when they saw the jujubes, they immediately, of course, went to go eat them and just hung out around the tree until I had to pull them away because they were just like so excited, just chewing on those jujubes, you know.
Do they have a pit?
Yeah, they have a seed.
A seed.
In most of the cultivated ones, like I mentioned, the seed is quite small and almost indistinct in some cases.
But you spit it out.
Usually I don't eat it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's it's not. It's just like you just eat around it, and they say they're. I think they're really good. If you were in Korea or some Asian country, you can buy them in markets in large quantities, both for fresh eating and dried ones. And they eat the dried ones, of course, year round.
Jujube.
Neat tree.
All right. And what do the leaves, do they turn color this time of year or anything like that?
Yeah, they turn yellow. And right now they're turning yellow. They're deciduous, of course. So they lose their leaves. They're hardy, probably minus 10 degrees. So anywhere in the Pacific Northwest, they should be fine, except in the very high elevation, coldest regions. I was in China exploring a couple of years ago. We went to a jujube, it was kind of an arboretum where they had old trees. And I have a picture, we stood by a tree that was 100 years old. And it was probably 15 to 20 feet tall, and a trunk diameter of about a foot, and it was 100 years old.
Huh. Okay, jujube. Thank you, Jim.
Sure.
Yeah, you should send me a photo. Do you have some photos of that in your?
I definitely have photos of the fruit. Yeah.
Yeah. Send me that, and I'll post it online.
Okay. Sure. Yeah.
We'll have it on the KBOO Dirtbag website.
Yeah, and I'll try to get you one with a bee on it next year on the flower.
Right, that'd be great.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a database of, I think it's approaching 250 plants now with bees on the blooms.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
It's kind of the other side of beekeeping, as it's sometimes called. Bees have to get their food someplace. So.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Well, let's take our first musical break here. This would be a good time for you to consider supporting KBOO. Realize that only about 10% of our listeners support KBOO, or financially. I mean, they might say, yeah, I like what KBOO does. And we are not particular at all about the size of your donation. If you have an ongoing monthly contribution or deduction, think about raising that. Sure takes it out of mind, but every month you can think about, I'm doing my part to support the program that I listen to.
Yeah, and you know, and I know that many of the listeners to the Dirtbag are probably listening to other programs on KBOO. I myself usually get up around 6 a.m. and I just love the music from 6 to 7. Actually, it starts at 5:30. Every day when I get up and I do my exercises, and some of the music is just outrageously good. I mean, it's something I love listening to. So, and then there's other musical programs today, for example, that have music all morning. There's a lot to like about KBOO.
Yeah. And if you don't, wait an hour or two and there will be something.
That's right.
There's just such diversity. There's over 300 volunteers. You know what that means? That means unpaid. That's like me and Jim and Joe. So support what we do. That's our message. Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of messages, and in our we start a musical break here. I was inspired this month by jujube. What does that mean? So we don't know, or I don't know. Maybe it's some foreign language. But anyway, so I have come up with some tunes that are nonsensical, have nonsensical names. So our first one is Upu Padu. This happens to be Stevie Guitar Miller's version of it, but it's a good listen. There's Steve Miller Band.
I want to tell you about Upu Padu. Baby, this
Steve Miller covering Upu Padu. That's almost fun to say.
Uh-huh.
It'll be fun the next song, too. Okay, well, we are in the last week of our membership drive, and we want to make sure that you know how you can donate to the station through the website, kboo.fm/give. You can click donate in the mobile app. You can text KBOO to 44-321, or you can mail a check to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. I also forgot to give you the website that you can write to us on, since we're not live yet, that if you have a gardening question, that we will answer it on the air the next program, and we will also that's how you will also answer the garden stumper, which is coming up in a few minutes. Well, Jim said that he's already had frost on his car out in near Malala, and although the temperature didn't get down to freezing, there was still frost, and so that's just a harbinger of fall. And my philosophy is it's a lot easier to take care of tasks when it's 60 degrees rather than 35. And so planning is good. So what do you do, Jim, ahead of time? I mean, you know a frost is coming, but it's not imminent.
Right. Well, the first thing is to get the tender plants into a protected spot. And if... we grow citrus out here. We grow quite a few citrus plants. And the crew has been working the last week or so moving those plants into a greenhouse. Since we had them out in an open area, but citrus plants like being outside. So we had kept them outside as long as possible, but now they have to go inside for the winter. We look around at any other plants that would be, like maypop, for example, is another a vine that we like to keep growing well into the winter and not have it lose its top, which it will when it gets frosted, so it goes inside. So that's the first order of business. Secondly, water is an amazing substance, as you probably know. Water is liquid in most of our lives, and at times we swim in it and drink it and all that, but it can turn hard when it freezes. And so when it turns hard and freezes inside a pipe, it can break a pipe. So we, another second thing we do is to make sure all of our exposed pipes are covered with something. Usually we take a plastic bag and we'll fill it with straw or sometimes sawdust and put it over our outdoor valves to keep them from freezing. We have little, there's little styrofoam cups that we've purchased years ago that we put over the valves that stick out the side of a building. And, you know, just taking the, like you said, Glenn, do the precautionary work now instead of in the middle of the night when your frost alarm goes off.
Right.
You know? That's pretty much, our making sure our heaters work. Like if you have a greenhouse with a heater in it and you want to make sure that the plants in there stay above freezing, you want to be sure to test your heaters and make sure that they're working. The thermostats are operating, all that stuff needs to be in order. But, you know, we're lucky. I mean, Oregon, even, we're very fortunate not to have the kind of cold weather that you can have in the Midwest in places. I thought about that last year very much after that ice storm we had when the power went out for 11 days out here at the nursery. But it only got down to 32 degrees. Mm-hmm. If we'd been in Texas where the power went out and it got down into the teens, we would have lost a lot of plants in greenhouses because you couldn't heat them when it's there's no electricity.
Yeah. Well, the one thing that I thought of here is that you do need to be cautious about mulching too heavily too soon. That is to say, as we've talked about, you know, it's fine to plant now because the ground is relatively warm. If you were to mulch now, you might artificially keep that ground warm longer than what the weather or the plant really needs to do to respond to colder weather. In other words, the plant may think, hey, we're doing fine here, and maybe it doesn't harden off or drop its leaves as quickly, or maybe even tries to put on new growth. I don't know exactly. But I've heard that that might be a good Thanksgiving Day project to mulch mm-hmm. your garden. In other words, that late in the season, you know, rather than now for heavy mulching of typically hardy plants, you know, roses or whatever, maybe hold off on that heavy mulching until later.
Sure. And because, I mean, one of the functions of the mulch is to keep weeds from growing, and weeds are not going mm-hmm. to be growing much right away.
Right.
This time of year.
Yeah. So. And we'll cover a little bit more of that when we talk about preparing your beds now for mm-hmm. for spring planting.
Sure.
So any, if we know that a frost is imminent, then we would take other precautions, but that's not really what we're talking about right now. We're talking about what can you should do in the middle of October, knowing that our cold weather is coming.
Right, right. And, you know, Portland, you know, I've seen Portland get some pretty hard freezes, hard enough to break pipes in houses. It's been a while. Mm-hmm. And who knows what with climate change and all that, what will happen? Right now it seems like the weather is more erratic than it is severely cold here. It's just weird things that have been mm-hmm. happening. But you know, what's that old saying? An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a broken pipe, that's a real drag.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And like I've mentioned, you know, it's just more pleasant to take care of tasks now than at 3 a.m, like Jim mentioned.
Right.
So, okay, well, that's that. And, I guess we'll get to our second musical break, and then we will come back with the answer to last month's puzzler and a new puzzler. Okay? Once again, This is the last week of the membership drive, and we would love to have your support during the dirt bag. And it's easy. You can go to the website, kboo.org, KBOO.fm/give. You can click donate on the mobile app if you have it. You can text KBOO to 44321, or you can mail your contribution to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. All right, in the continuing series of nonsensical names of songs, this one is from Slim Harpo. I turn to Slim Harpo occasionally, and I don't know where these guys come up with this, but it's sure fun. Te Nanina Nu. Te Nanina Nu. I even looked this up, you know, well, what does that mean? And it apparently it was like, it's, you know, it's somebody's, you know, sweet baby or something like that. You know, Te Nanina Nu.
Right, that's what you anyway, say to your baby, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah, maybe so.
Te Nanina Nu.
Yeah. Anyway, here's Slim Harpo.
I want you to be my Te Nanina Nu. I want you to be my Te Nanina Nu. Tell me the truth, ain't you my Te Nanina Nu? Now will you love me? Will you hug me? Will you squeeze me? Come on, don't tease me. Tell me the truth. Ain't you my Te Nanina Nu?
That's Slim Harpo, Te Nanina Nu, here on The Dirtbag. With me in the studio is Jim Gilbert and our ace sound engineer, Joe Wilson of Bergman Productions.
In our big, expansive studio, you might mention, Glenn.
Right, it spans three counties.
I'm out here in lovely Liberal, which is between Malala and Canby, by the way.
Right, yeah. And Joe is in Tualatin? Tigard. Tualatin, yes, okay. And I'm here in Northeast. Okay, Jim, you know what time it is?
I can only guess.
It's right, it's time for the Garden Stumper. Well, this is a pretty easy one, unlike last month's, which was not hard, but it was more complicated, certainly, and we'll answer that in just a moment. But this month's Garden Stumper is, what is leaf mold? What is leaf mold? Is it a good thing or a bad thing for your garden? And Jim says, can you eat it? We don't really need to know that answer there, but if you have the answer to the Garden Stumper, the email address is thedirtbag@kboo.org. And if you are the first correct, if you offer the first correct answer, you will get a free garden hand tool sharpening from Coley Farm Store at 4209 Northeast Alberta Street. And this includes hand pruners, loppers, shears, shovels, and hose. You know, not power equipment, but hand tools. And if you don't think that it helps, just get a tool sharpened and you'll be amazed at the difference. So that's thanks to Coley Farm Store. We appreciate Farmer Ted.
I have to say, make a comment. When you said that, it reminded me, I have a Husqvarna battery-powered chainsaw that I dearly love. And I've sharpened it by hand for numerous times. And it was just like, you know, I just could feel like it wasn't doing the task. So I took it to the local saw shop, paid $12 to get it professionally sharpened. Man, what a difference. It was like night and day. It was such a joy to just cut through that wood like it was nothing, you know?
Yeah. Boy, so. Earlier this year, too, I got a battery chainsaw, a small one, you know, pruning a 12-inch bar, which is, of course, not 12 inches. But and the first time I pruned a fig tree, you know, it was like butter. It went through it like butter.
Old fig.
So I know exactly the elation that you felt, because this was factory sharpened. I mean, I've sharpened chainsaws for years, and it just never is as good as what pros can do.
Yeah, a good sharp tool is a real joy. I mean, pruners, hoppers, saws, they make the job a lot easier if they're sharp.
Yeah. Well, $12 is that's a bargain.
That's what I thought.
Chainsaw. Yeah. Okay. Well, we had the last month's garden stumper. Jim, do you have it written down there? I can read it here.
I remember it pretty well. This was an interesting one. I actually did not study science in school. And when I became a farmer and started Northwoods Nursery, I recognized how important science is. I mean, I recognized it before, but it really became apparent to me. And one of the fun things about science, I mean, there's so many things that people have done for centuries. One was the way that they decided to name plants, the scientific name, not the common name. And so the stumper basically was going back to my lack of science education and wanting to share my joy with science, with others. And so when you're in the plant business, in the plant world, you know about plant scientific names. So I asked basically, the genus Prunus has numerous species of fruits and one nut. And among those, I gave the example of Prunus persica, which is the peach and nectarine. And the stumper was to name two additional fruits and the nut. And then also, the common name would be okay, but if you knew the Latin name, that would be extra credit for it, or the scientific name. So we had three responses. John and Lila wrote, their answers were close, but not exactly right. And then we had a response from Heath, and Heath got it correct. So basically, what Heath answered was Prunus cerasus, which is cherry, and Prunus armeniaca, which is apricot, and Prunus amygdalis, which is the nut, which is almond. Well, then subsequent to that, these were the answers we got, and Heath won the stumper. Matthew wrote, and he was a winner of a previous stumper, and mentioned about what the scientific nature of things, that almond is not really classified as a nut. And if you ever look at an almond, it looks like a dried up peach, and the actual almond itself is the peach pit, so to speak. But of course, everybody knows it as a nut. You don't eat the almond skin because it's very dry and there's nothing there to eat. And so commonly it's known as a nut. And then I think about, there's a couple of other ones, in particular apricot, that in my travels in Uzbekistan in particular, apricot kernels, they actually grow apricots for the kernel there, which are very good, roasted, very sweet, delicious. And so, you know, could you call an apricot a nut? Well, probably not, because you eat the apricot mostly, and they have the kernel as sort of an accessory to it. But anyway, it was a really interesting stumper, I thought. And thank you all for responding, and for anybody who thought about responding.
I remember my mother making, was it peach pit jelly?
Mm.
She would do something to soak them, or it was a very light kind of a rosé color. And boy, I remember liking that so much, just the flavor of it. Peach pit jelly. I'll have to ask her about that. She's 91 now, but she'll
that would be great to know how she did that. I mean, that's basically, you know, you have to crack the hard outer part of the nut of the seed, and then you take the softer kernel inside, and and that's what they do with the apricot. That's how they use those for the edible kernel.
Okay, well, it's too bad we don't have immediate feedback on the our garden stumper, but it's fine to wait for the emails to come in too. So once again, thedirtbag@kboo.org.
And the question is, what is leaf mold, right?
What is leaf mold? That's right.
It actually doesn't sound like something you'd want to eat.
No?
I think I'll pass on.
Not really. Okay. I was out hunting mushrooms with our mushroom hunting friends earlier. Well, it would have been last week by the time this program gets aired. And I asked my friend Brad if he knew of anybody that trained dogs or other animals to find mushrooms. And he said he didn't know of any, because there's not as much value in, say, a truffle, where they do have dogs. And of course, pigs that will find them here in Oregon, even. I don't know about the pigs in Oregon, but the dogs certainly. But we were having a hard time finding many of the chanterelles, which is what we were looking for at the time. I thought, and he had his dog with him, it was actually his girlfriend's dog, running all around there. And that got me thinking, boy, that'd be great if the dog had a reward by finding these morsels. Yeah. But boy, they're tasty. Boy, they're tasty. Yep. Okay. Anyway, on with the show here. This is fall, and we've got winter and spring. So we have a half a year to go before we're going to be planting vegetables again, essentially. But the time is now to be planning for that, or at least it is for me when I am getting beds that are harvesting them, clearing them out. What am I going to do with those beds? It's still time, I think, to plant cover crops, certainly rye, and maybe even crimson clover. And I planted fava beans last week, so I'm sure hoping that they're all right. But there are some beds that are completely clear, but I did not plant anything there because it's a pretty weed-free bed, and I like to use that as a bed where I'm going to be planting almost every square inch of the bed. That is to say, with carrots or beets or spinach or something that just covers the whole bed. You're not planting individual plants, even onions, even though I plant in rows, that it covers, you know, they're 3 inches apart. And so it takes virtually all the space. And furthermore, I want a bed that is free for planting, if you will, early in the season. If I have planted a cover crop in said bed, then to get the full benefit of the nitrogen fixing, I would have to wait another month before it flowers, but before it starts forming seed pods. That will be the peak of the nitrogen fixation, we'll say, on the roots. And I don't want to wait a month for that to happen. I could pull them up, but then there's other processes that I might want to have to do, for example, put down compost or other amendments, if you will. So what I have done on some of these beds here is I haven't put fertilizer down there, because any nitrogen will probably be just, most of it would be washed away with the rains, and so I'll wait on that. But what I did put down was eggshells, which is a long-term source of calcium. I just typically do that. Just as an aside here, I save my eggshells from the Swedish pancake booth that I do every August. And so I end up generally with, it's not a full 5 gallon bucket full of eggshells, crushed eggshells, but at least a half. And by the way, Jim, we've decided that next year is our last year for the for that booth. So no more eggshells.
Well, I think I have to make sure to get down there, Glenn. That's
I wasn't saying that for that reason. You can always come over to my house for Swedish pancake feed.
Sounds good.
Maybe Joe would come too. We'll have a Swedish pancake fry. In any event, if nitrogen is the number one used and important element, nutrient in our soil, I would argue that calcium is the second. And so I always give it I try to give my garden eggshells, which I have, but you can buy, oyster shell powder or other sources of calcium. But I spread some of these crushed eggshells and then covered this bed with compost, maybe 2 or 3 inches. And I may even then put on some shredded leaves when those are available. And that's how it goes through the winter. So when I'm ready to plant in the spring, April, if I want to seed carrots or something like that, I might take off the shredded leaves, but I would leave everything else on there and just put the bed is already prepared. It doesn't need any more inputs. I might sprinkle on some organic fertilizer at that point, but it's the chances of having good weather for preparing your bed are a lot fewer in March and April than now. And so I always leave two beds to choose from. The other beds that I've planted with cover crops and whatnot, those are easy to prepare in the spring, and I'll be planting tomatoes or squash or potatoes, something that it's a foot and a half apart, so it's not as critical. So once again, the weather is great now for doing things, and much better than later. You're going to have to do it one time or the other, so you might as well do it when it's more pleasant for you. I guess you can't get this old and not learn something about how you like to work.
And the weather forecast is pretty decent. I mean, there's supposed to be a little rain tomorrow, but next week sounds pretty good. So,
yeah, still below average temperatures. But last year at this time, we were having temperatures in the 70s. So, that's why we talk about averages and not normal temperatures, or should. So, okay, well, before we take our... we get into Jim's short history of the Oregon's land use planning. Our Dirtbag Dictionary term this month is calyx. Jim, you want to tackle that?
What?
It's not like it needs tackling.
That's right. Dig into it.
It's not very controversial.
How about we take a look at it? So...
Yes, very good. Right. Define it.
So what's inspired me for that word was because I've been eating a lot of pears and apples, and at the end of every pear and apple, there's the calyx end of that fruit, which is opposite of the stem end. So I looked up the actual definition of calyx, and it was interesting how it basically it's a whorl of leaf-like area, leaf-like material that covers the bottom of the flower, the sepals of the flower. And so when you look at a flower, you have the flower petals, and then the calyx is the structure underneath those petals that protects them from getting knocked off. And when, of course, when you have that, the flower turns into fruit, and then what's left of those of that calyx is what's at the end of the fruit. So you look at the end of an apple, and you see that little area, little spot down there, with little sharpie things, dark black things.
not to get technical.
Those were once likely to be green, several of them that had covered the bottom of the flower, protected it.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay, calyx. That's good. Well, and it helps to know how to identify an area of the fruit, so you can say all the stem end or the right. calyx end, you know, because oftentimes pests or something will enter or exit through the calyx end.
Yeah,
Jim's checking on something there.
It's pretty simple, but just a word that we use and probably don't oftentimes know what it means, you know.
That's an excellent suggestion for the Dirtbag Dictionary. We're not going to publish these or anything.
They'll be recorded in the archive, so if anybody wants to go back and look at a past show.
Yeah. What did Jim say about the calyx? I know he said something.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, well, speaking of saying something, and Jim, he has this interesting series, or little, you know, this little segment here that we're going to devote some time, at least a few minutes for the show, to talk about Oregon's land use, the history and planning. So, take it away, Jim. And we'll once again we'll just mention that we're in the last week of our membership drive, and keep that in mind when Jim brings you this this good information based upon much of his experience, because you were there at the beginning.
Well, yeah. So yeah,
many of us were, but not necessarily in the planning part of it. But
some of my relatives were in the planning part. I was pretty young.
Okay.
And in fact, what I want to talk about today goes back way before. It goes back to my grandparents' generation, because Oregon has this incredible history. And before I go into that too far, I just want to also mention that when we talk about what's happening on the farm, I got to tell you about my grandkids and potatoes. That's nothing to do with land use planning, but
okay.
it's pretty amazing. But anyway, Oregon has this amazing history, and I find that a lot of people don't know about it. Many, many young people who've moved here or even grown up here, or older people, they just sort of take it for granted when they go to the beach, and the beaches are all beautiful and nice, and nobody's built houses on the beach, or there's no fences on the beaches. When they go in the mountains and there's the forests, there's lots of parks, and you go out into the country, you drive out of Portland or any city, and there's this boundary that you encounter where the city changes and it becomes farmland. And that didn't happen by accident. These things were developed. There were far-sighted people in Oregon that did remarkable things in the past. And one of my goals, certainly probably for the rest of my life, is to try to convey this, educate people, tell people about this, because I think it really what makes our state so special. It's very unique in the country this way. So today I'll just take a couple of minutes and talk about something something happened to me a while back, and I thought it was kind of funny and also kind of instructive. My partner Lorraine and I were down at Brighton Bush Hot Springs taking a bath in the hot tub, soaking in the hot tub, and there were four other people in the hot tub with us, and it was a kind of a cold morning, and we were all without clothes, of course, so it was kind of a captive audience for me. Because I figured they couldn't just jump and run away real easily. So I asked them some questions about Oregon. And one of the questions I asked, you know, had they been to Oswald West State Park? And one of them said, yeah, I've been there, but I was wondering where Oswald East was. And that spurred me to talk more about this. Because when I was a kid, I used to drive, when I got my driver's license, one of our favorite escapes from school was to go over to Short Sands Beach, which is this beautiful beach where you walk to from the highway to the parking lot, and you walk down to it, and south of Cannon Beach, north of Manzanita. And there's this beautiful park there called Oswald West State Park. Well, why is it called Oswald West? In 1913, Oswald West was the governor of Oregon. And he signed a bill that made Oregon beaches public highways. Now, there weren't hardly any cars on the road. And so people, you know, but our beaches became public property. You couldn't build a fence on it. You couldn't own the beach. And that's been, that bill has been modified and improved on over the years, but it's still what makes our Oregon beaches so unique and so wonderful. And it was interesting because these the four people in the hot tub with us, not only did they not know about that, but I mean, they were all from different states. They'd all moved to Oregon, and they were like just really interested in this. I found it fascinating because they really appreciated the fact that, you know, this state did not just happen by accident. We people worked on it. So that was 1913. That was when my grandparents were still young, and time passed. And the next time I talk about this, I'll talk a lot more about the more current land use stuff, which pretty soon we're going to be celebrating the 50th anniversary of the signing of Senate Bill 100. And that was in 1973. And Senate Bill 100 established the current system of urban growth boundaries. So again, the idea when you know, here we are, I'm here on this farm, and around me are farms. I can look out the window right now and I see a blueberry orange patch across the street. I see hazelnuts being grown. All these farms are within 40 minutes of Portland. In probably any other state, there would be subdivisions out here. You would not be able to farm in this region. It would be very, very difficult. But because we have this wonderful system of the urban growth boundary, we are still farming. And I hope we will do it for centuries to come. And I think, you know, I'll talk more about that part in the next show.
Part two coming up.
And by the way, I want to tell listeners, I have a little brochure I created, which said it's titled, How Did Oregon Become Oregon? And if anybody would like to get a copy of it, I would be happy to send it by mail to anybody who would write to me. My email address is jim@northwoodsnursery.com. And I say, anybody who would like to get a copy of this little brochure I made, I'll send it to you. jim@northwoodsnursery.com.
Where else are you going to get such a kind offer? Except on KBOO. You can support KBOO. You need to support KBOO. Once again, you know, just 10% of our listeners. I guess that's all right to have just 10%. But we'd sure like more. I mean, we're not pressuring anybody. It's just, if you get something from it, he or she or they who benefit should help pay for that.
Well,
they can do that. The kboo.fm/give. You can click donate on the KBOO mobile app. Text KBOO to 44321 or mail your check to KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, 97214. Jim, we're out of time. Joe tells us Joe's countdown has hit zero. So
well,
that's it for now.
I was going to tell you about potatoes and the grandkids.
Oh, yeah.
Real quick. We dug we dug probably 150 pounds of potatoes yesterday with these guys, 4 and 6 years old. They just had so much fun. It was like, you know, like discovering treasures, buried treasure. And it was only in about an 8-foot long area that we grew all these potatoes. I'm not a big potato eater, but I'm going to eat a lot more of them this year. So.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay. Well, we thank all of you for donating, becoming members of KBOO, and for listening to The Dirtbag. Jim, thank you very much. And particular thanks to Joe, who is not on his deathbed, but at least is recovering from just a common cold, we think.
Thank you, Glenn. Thank you, Joe.
You bet. We'll be back next month, probably 4 weeks from today. I don't even know what the date is yet. November
2nd. Second Wednesday there. Of November. Whatever.
That's right, 11 o'clock. Yeah. We're there. So we'll go out today with one more nonsensical, although this is a little bit, we've heard this one before, Bebopalooa. But this is done by, of all people, John Lennon. Wow. So there's a little bit of talking before we get into that. But anyway, thank you all. Be well. Bebopalooa, she's my baby. Bebopalooa, I don't mean maybe. Bebopalooa, she's my baby. Bebopalooa, I don't mean maybe. Bebopalooa, she's my baby love, baby love, my baby love.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy miércoles 13 de octubre del 2021. Dos madres de Wisconsin cuyos hijos tuvieron COVID-19 en septiembre han demandado a sus distritos escolares por poner en peligro innecesario y temerariamente la salud y la seguridad de sus hijos y otros estudiantes. Ambas demandas acusan a los distritos escolares de crear un pozo de serpientes para los estudiantes al no implementar las medidas de seguridad del COVID-19 recomendadas por los funcionarios de salud, como la utilización de mascarillas en interiores en sus escuelas este año. Las demandas dicen que el distrito escolar y la junta escolar de Falls Creek